Good morning, Rabbi Abraham. We're asking if you had completed the topic of Kof. I said I wasn't sure. I don't think so. But when that time comes, we were just discussing the other end of life, all the laws of mourning, which also has various stages and complications and is a topic self-contained but very large. Might be something worth that you might want to consider going over with us. When we finish, unless Gideon is next.
As far as finishing, I plan on finishing it up today. In other words, it's really already sort of touched on the end last time, but I want to finish up things, some details today. It, as a topic, a possible topic for continuation, issues of Avelut, that's a reasonable possibility. I'll think about it.
Okay.
Okay, so as I said, first of all, good morning to everybody. As I said, this is meant to be the closing this series of the suing. And in the same way as we spoke about a little more at length about the pre-wedding time, which is halachically connected with the wedding, there's also a post-wedding period in which there are certain halachot that apply, and I'd like to touch on at least some of those today. The thing that is probably most known to people and really plays the most central part in the post-wedding halachic expressions of Chatan and Kala is the meals that are made, especially for the Chatan and Kala, in which we conclude them also with the same brachot, the same seven brachot that were said at the chuppah and later were said, later were said at the meal of the wedding. They are said once again also in the meals that are set up for the Chatan and Kala during the 7 days that follow the wedding. The 7 days as a whole are counted. There are nuances of the halachic discussion, but as a whole, the 7 days are counted from the time of the chuppah. In other words, if the chuppah were before shkiah, then that would be counted as a day, and from shkiah on, there would only be 6 days. But if the chuppah took place right after shkiah, then that would be the beginning of the first day, and then there would be six additional days, so that you could have a situation where you had the chuppah, let's say, on a Sunday night, right, and Monday afternoon, which is part of the first day, you'd have a meal, and similarly, you would then have another one at the end on the Sunday the following week. As far as the brachot and the halachot that apply to the Sheva brachot, including the additions in the Zimun, the Vay Haser, and so on. Here, in Sheva Brachot, the meals that we call Sheva Brachot, the halachot are more or less parallel to that which we spoke about during the wedding itself. The uniqueness, the halachic uniqueness, in reference to the meals during the week that follow the wedding, are in the necessity of what we call tamim chadashot. Not just what we call, the Gemara discusses it and mentions the idea of tamim chadashot. As the Gemara in Ketuvot says that the Sheva Brachot are said during meals following the wedding, in condition that there be panim chadashot. And Here, there is somewhat of a debate or discussion amongst the poskim, what defines, what categorizes panim chadashot. There are those who focus on the aspect of the bracha. In other words, those who have not yet heard the seven brachot, have not been involved in some circumstance where the seven brachot were being said. Others speak about panim chadashot as being a person, persons who add a dimension, a new dimension to the atmosphere of the joy, the simchat ha-nesui.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, Avi.
Is it a chiyuv to have the sheva brachot, the option, or if you have 10 people? Because many, so certain couples that say, okay, we had two nights, I'm going for vacation.
I don't think that you could say that it's an absolute obligation. However, we do find tshuvot, and we do find writings of poskim that speak against the situation where people, the classic thing is brought there, you know, right after the wedding, people go away, and there are no sheva brachot. So that there is sort of an in-between state here. There's a mitzvah in saying or having these opportunities to say the brachot and be mishabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the wedding. And it's part of also the requirement, which I'll speak about towards the end, of adding simcha between the chatan and kala during this week. But one could not say in a definitive manner that there's some kind of prohibition to go away or so on. Advisable would be, again, it's not always possible because of all kind of, you know, work and school requirements and so on, but what advisable would be that a chatan and kala push off their getaway to a week afterwards, so that during the week there can be sheva brachot. Certainly, there is no halacha that requires that every meal have sheva brachot. As a matter of fact, we'll see in the details. There are only specific circumstances in which the sheva brachot is said. But being available, and on the one hand, and for people to set up these sheva brachot are an element of simcha and the mitzvah as well. Okay, so that's, it sits somewhere in between the two options that you asked up. So the Gemara, as I said, requires sheva brachot. Excuse me, panim chadashot for sheva brachot. There is a discussion exactly what constitutes the panim chadashot. As I presented, there are two main themes. One is a person who has not been and has not heard the brachot previously, and the other is a person who adds a new dimension to the simcha. Even amongst these positions, there are somewhat of differences of nuances that we're not going to get into in this frame. When we speak about not having been present previously, then we do not include the sheva brachot said at a chuppah. In other words, theoretically, a person who has been at the chuppah but did not partake in a meal, there are many poskim who say even though he heard the seven brachot, his participation in the meal afterwards would allow for the saying of sheva brachot. This could have a significance. I'll give you an example where I was in a similar kind of situation. My niece got married literally the night before I finished Yud Bet Chodesh. So I went to the chuppah, though, again, that has to do with, we learned Avilut, we'll touch on the issues of that in Avilut. But even though in most circumstances I didn't go to chuppah, but here, because it was a family, I went to the chuppah. I did not sit in the meal. I didn't participate in the meal. So I wasn't there as far as Sheva Brachot for the, I wasn't at the meal and I wasn't there for Sheva Brachot of the meal. Theoretically, had there been a need, I could have, according to many opinions, been the person who creates the Panim Chadashot at a Sheva Brachot later on. In any event, these are the fundamental requirements. And then there are all kind of issues or details that touch upon identifying who constitutes a Panim Chadashot. I'll touch on a few of them so we get some kind of idea, especially since this is something that has an element of Halacha Lamaisa. We make from time to time a meal of Sheva Brachot for friends and relatives. And the question is, you know, who can fulfill this spot of Panim Chadashot to allow the reciting of the Sheva Brachot? So I mentioned already that there is discussion in reference to having been at the Sheva Brachot of the Chuppah, but not the meal. A person who meal, let's say the wedding reception, the wedding meal, right, but left before the Birkat HaMazon, before the brachot was said. Since he was there in the framework of the simcha, he does not fulfill the requirement of Sheva Brachot. And that's because we play with the two aspects of having heard the Brachot and adding in a dimension. Since that person had already been there at part of the celebration, having been at the meal, he cannot fulfill the requirement of Sheva Brachot. However, if a person took in a meal after the wedding, but Sheva Brachot were not said there, right? So here there are opinions that say that since the Sheva Brachot didn't have the conditions for saying Sheva Brachot, then that doesn't count as having been there, and one can then be just the Panim Chadashot. Again, ideally, I would not use such a person, but if that's what can be found, there's what to be somech on so that Sheva Brachot can be said. A child cannot be seen as the Panim Chadoshot, even if it's a child that has significance or importance to the couple, he still would not constitute a panim chadashot halachically. This leads to an interesting discussion in halacha. What about a child who was present, let's say, at the meal of the wedding, or it's from other Sheva Brachot, and then, before the week is over, became 13 years old? Before, and he was a katan, and as he said, does not constitute Sheva Brachot. But after he became a gadol, now theoretically, he can be a person who will fulfill in the Sheva Brachot. However, he has been, he personally has been at the meal, or at a previous meal. So here there are differing opinions amongst the poskim again, and this is, again, something that could be used if there was no better choice, but we should be aware that there are those who feel that since he was present, then he does not constitute Sheva Brachot. This, to some extent, would be dependent on the two approaches as to who is defined as Panim Chadashot. If we say it has to do with Brachot, since he was a Katan and could not be part of the Mevarchim and part of the Brachot, so therefore his change from a Katan to a Gadol is significant. But if we say that Panim Chadashot is somebody who adds some new dimension to the rejoicing, he hasn't been now another person is part of our Simcha, then this person has been there previously, and the fact that he was a Katan and now is literally halachically a Gadol doesn't make much of a difference as far as the sense of rejoicing that somebody else came in. So that would be a distinction. Another case that seemingly would be a nafkamina, a difference between the two approaches, would be the question of can a woman function as panim chadashot? In other words, let's say you have a situation, there are 10 men present, so there's no problem as far as the zimun, the brachot being said with 10 men. But all of the 10 men had been previously in meals of the simcha. And there's a woman who had not been at a previous meal and joins in at this meal. Can she constitute panim chadashot? So first of all, at face value, it very much depends on the two positions that we mentioned before. Because if the issue is outright somebody who has been part of the brachot or not, since the woman does not partake in the brachot, and Birkat HaMazon is part of the minyan of the Birkat HaMazon, then her being or not being is irrelevant and she would not partake. The other hand, if we say that this is an aspect of adding something to the simcha, I can see a situation where a woman's presence would add a lot to the chatan kala's simcha. Let's say a woman who is related to one of them, very closely related, or a woman who is a good friend of theirs, a woman who facilitated their marriage, her presence would definitely add a lot to the element of the simcha, and therefore, from that perspective, would be able to constitute a panim chadashot. In practice, or halacha lemaisa, though there are those who say that a woman in a situation like this, on the basis of her adding an element of simcha, could constitute a panim chadashot, halacha lemaise, I did not find any serious sources that allowed it. In other words, the Ritva already in the Gemara and Ketubot mentions that a woman, even though she adds to the simcha, isha chashuva, she adds to the simcha, but since she does not partake in the brachot aspect, then she cannot be considered for the Sheva Brachot. In other words, what we're saying here is that basically we are putting the two opinions, the two definitions of Panim Chadashot together, and as long as one of the dimensions is lacking, then we do not allow it to be Panim Chadashot. The same thing is brought, he doesn't quote the Ritva as the source for this, but the Pitchei Tshuva, and the Shulchan Aruch also writes more or less the same thing. Rav Avadia Yosef in Yabi Omer quotes someone who does allow a woman to be panim chadashot, but then rejects it based on the Ritva. He himself rejects that possibility. And then there is a more, let's say, more conservative, right-wing approach that I don't think, definitely, I don't feel it applies in our sociological realities, but those who require absolute separation because mixed seating or mixed participation in such a simcha is something that's not desirable. So they basically come and say, how can you say Shas simcha bimono, that there's joy in God's presence, when how can God be joyful of something that is so inappropriate as mixed participation? If she's not part of the, if it's not mixed, she's not present, so you can't include her for the simchat, for the Sheva Brachot, and therefore Sheva Brachot cannot be said. I think that in the society that most of us live in, where a mixed setting within its parameters is something that's not frowned upon, that would not be a consideration. And therefore, we fall back to the Ritva and Titchei Tshuva. In practice, I have never seen any serious source, that maybe, but I haven't come across it yet, a serious source that says practically to allow and to do it. However, I think that if you went to a Sheva Brachot, and this was a more liberal kind of setting, and somebody there on the basis of liberal thinking and the rationales, the halachic rationales that we raised here, did use a woman for Panim Chadashot and Sheva Brachot were to be said, I think that that would not constitute a bracha levatala. And to the extent that I would even say, if you were asked to say one of the brachot, you should not hesitate and could say it. But lechatchila, to build your Sheva Brachot and Panim Chadashot, being the woman, being that both the Ritva and the Pitchei Tshuva openly say not to, and quite a few other poskim quote them as reason not to base on a woman as a Panim Chadashot, I would not do it lechatchila. On the other hand, I do think that if you happen to come to somebody's home and it is done that way, you could even participate in saying the brachot and not be hesitant about it being a bracha. Any questions on what was said up to now? Okay.
I do have a question. If you're in a place that's not makbid on the Panim Chadashot and they offer you a bracha, you can't say your bracha.
Did you go to a Sheva Brachot
they're not makbid. They don't have a Panim Chadashot, but they have a Sheva Brachot anyway.
I would, in a situation like that, refrain from, if possible, refrain from saying the bracha, because that's already an outright din of the Gemara that the Brachot has said only when there's Panim Chadashot. I'm not sure why or how. At least I'm not familiar with any kind of halachic legitimization to say the brachot. And therefore, I would be wary of it being a brachot. Okay. Could be that it's something I'm not familiar with, and I'd be happy to have somebody point it out to me on the basis of what. But I don't know. Have you ever been in such a thing? I mean, or are you asking this theoretically?
Oh, no, but I could see myself coming to places like that. I could see it happening.
I think it's a well enough known thing, a well enough known thing, you know, to have Panim Chadashot, but people are particular. I've had situations where there was more complex issues. In other words, where the 10 men didn't eat there, only 3 were at the meal, and then there was Panim Chadashot, but the Panim Chadashot were somebody who came, later on and was only there for dessert. Can that constitute a Panim Chadashot in the lab because there are 10 people there, but the 10 people didn't eat? Yeah, there are different opinions in the post whether majority of people have to have eaten for it to be a seuda that we say we say things that are based on 10 people, or if there are present 10 people and there's panim chadashot, you can say sheva bracha. There are different opinions in the post. Therefore, I think that most people are aware that there's a need for panim chadashot. I don't think that it's a highly probable thing that you would encounter. If possible, as if you know you're in such a situation, you see that there's nobody who's panim chadashot, if there's a way of commenting something to the hosts, maybe they can get some neighbor or somebody to join in, that would be advisable. If not, if you could avoid saying the bracha, I think that one should try to avoid saying the bracha because it might constitute a bracha. Okay? There's all kinds of other details. I'm not going to, get into details. I'm not going to remember them. I think that what I gave here gave the general direction of what constitutes a panim chadashot and doesn't constitute a panim chadashot. There are exceptions as far as the necessity for panim chadashot. And that is on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Okay. Shabbat itself is mentioned as Panim Chadashot. Reference to the Midrash, the Mizmor Shir Leyom Shabbat, Ba'u Lekan Panim Chadashot. Shabbat is called like something new that it comes to your house. Right? I guess that goes hand in hand with the idea of Shamayat Teira, that there's something, the malachim that come to your house and so on. There's something special in the sense of the atmosphere present in one's home on Shabbat, and that constitutes a sufficient change to create what we call it panim chadashot for the meals of Shabbat. Most opinions feel that that is also relevant to the first two meals of Shabbat. As there is night and day, each constitute a unit in themselves of Shabbat, and therefore each of those meals, the Shabbat itself, can be seen as Panim Chadashot. The bigger question is in reference to there are those who hold that in Suda Shlishit you must have Panim Chadashot. It's the Shabbat meals, the primary Shabbat meals were the first two meals. Suda Shlishit is an added meal that we learn from the Psukim, but as an added meal, you also find that as far as Suda Shlishit, at least B'di'evid, there is place to be lenient about it as far as do you eat it with bread or not. And therefore, according to some opinions, for Suda Shlishit, one must have Panim Chadashot. There are, on the other hand, opinions that say that no, since it's Shabbat, since it's one of the meals of Shabbat, and the halacha of Shabbat is a halacha of three meals, therefore, on Shabbat and Suda Shlishit, we can have Sheva Brachot, even if there's no Panim Chadashot. There is sort of an in-between, but I'm not 100% comfortable with it, but it definitely appears in the post scheme that in Suda Shlishit, if there are Divrei Torah, then you could do that, and that's the Panim Chadashot, even if there isn't a person present. I don't know exactly how or why that combination of Shabbat with Divrei Torah is more than Divrei Torah that's said at some other meal, but that is an opinion that appears in some significant poskim, and therefore that could be a basis. What I would say in practice is, ideally, one would strive to have panim chadashot at least in seudah shlishit on Shabbat. If panim chadashot cannot be found, or there's some issue, you're in a hotel and there's nobody else to add to the meal, then I would suggest the idea of having divrei Torah, which are usually said in any case in such meals. But the eved, if that doesn't occur, you're in some environment that even divrei Torah are strange to them, or something that you can't suggest that you would give something, so on, then there is on what to be dependent on the opinion that says that even Seudah Shlishit constitutes a panim chadashot of Shabbat. And once again, those brachot I would not call bracha levatala. I wouldn't suggest doing it lechatchila, but if that is done, I would not refrain from saying the bracha in a situation like that. Obviously, if there are more than three meals, right? A long summer day, somehow, you know, they had a Friday night meal, and then they have a, kiddush meal, and then something in midday of a lunch, and then towards the end of the day, there's a fourth meal. In that case, the fourth meal definitely would require panim chadashim. Similarly, on Yom Tov, also, even though the Midrash talks about Shabbat as panim chadashot, but l'halacha, we apply that to Yom Tov as well, and therefore the two primary meals, the night and day meal of Yom Tov, do not require panim chadashot. And Shevar Brachot could be said even without panim chadashot. Should there be an additional meal, again, long days, there's a possibility of having a later meal, even on a Yom Tov. In those circumstances, that third meal, because there's no halacha of Shalosh Seudot and Yom Tov as there is in Shabbat, therefore, according to all opinions, a third meal on Yom Tov would require the presence of Panim Chadashot to say the... say the Sheva Brachot. An interesting discussion, again, that takes place amongst the poskim with different opinions is what happens in reference to Chol Hamoed. Is Chol Hamoed also defined enough to create Panim Chadashot or not? I think that the discussion here is, to some extent, not 100%, but to some extent, parallel to the halachic discussion as to do we put on tefillin on Chol Hamoed or not? Does Chol Hamoed constitute an oath of Kedusha like Yom Tov? And therefore, we see it in many aspects like a Yom Tov or not? So here, we have differing opinions. We're again, being that there are those who are less lenient about it, I think that it's advisable to have a panim chadashot if possible. But for the other, there's what to be somech on if not. An interesting aspect to it is there are those who say that Sukkot would be different than Pesach. Why? Because on Sukkot, we say that each day stands in of itself. Each day is a Kedusha in itself. And you see that reflected through the different Korban Musaf that is offered each day of Sukkot. And it expresses itself halachically. That is the reason why on Sukkot, we say Hallel HaShalem, as opposed to Pesach, when on Chol HaMoed we only say a chatzi halel. It's not because of the, even though the Mishnah Berurah brings that Baba Mainza, but the Baba Mainza says Maseh Adai Tovim Bayam and so on. The real reason, as the Gemara presents, is that Sukkot, each day is a entity in itself as reflected through the Korban, and therefore we say Halel HaShalem. Similarly, those who want to say, therefore, each day of Sukkot constitutes an independent Kedusha and would therefore be sufficient for Panim Chadashot, even if on Pesach we would not depend on it. So here we have some differing opinions on that. There are those who apply this to Purim as well. I think that if Sheva Brachot fall on Purim, one should preferably have Panim Chadashot. Chanukah is clearly not defined as Panim Chadashot, and you would need to have someone as Panim Chadashot. And similarly, Rosh Chodesh also in itself does not constitute Panim Chadashot, and you need someone who would fulfill that element of Panim Chadashot. When there is no Panim Chadashot, okay, the accepted custom is that we just don't say anything. We say regular Birkat HaMazon, and that's it. But halachically, that isn't correct, and I really think that in situations of that sort, the effort should be made to add in to say after Birkat HaMazon, the last of the Sheva Brachot. There's not, you don't say all the Sheva Brachot, but you do say the last bracha. Bracha Shebrach, Sason, Sincha, Chatan, Betala, Va, Rina, Ditsa, Vechedva, Ava, Vachva, Veshalom, Vereut, Meira, Hashem, Elokeinu, Yishama, Barei, Yehuda, Vechutzot, Yerushalayim, Kol, Sason, Kol, Sincha, Kol, Chatan, Vekol, Kala, כל מצוות חתנים מחופתם ונערים ממשתי נגינתם, ברוך אתה השם, משמח החתן עם הכלה. That bracha should be said even if there isn't panim chadashot. If you look at the structure of the Sheva brachot, you will see that the first four brachot begin with Baruch. The reason is because three of those four brachot are what we would categorize as a bracha ktsara, a short bracha, and any short bracha begins with Baruch. The fourth bracha begins with Baruch because it follows a bracha ktsara, but it in itself is a bracha aruka, right? And therefore has a chatima, right? Baruch Ata Hashem Yotzer HaAdam. Hence, the next two brachot that follow are without an opening of Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, because they constitute what we call in halacha bracha hasmucha lechavreita, a bracha that's said in flow from a previous bracha aruka that had a chatima. And any bracha that has a chatima, and regularly the next bracha is said following it, the next bracha does not open with Baruch and just has a chatima. So that's why Sostasis and Sameach Tesamach do not begin with Baruch Ata Hashem. If the bracha Baras Sason B'Simcha were similar to those two brachot, then it too should not have had an opening. However, we find that Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Asher Baras Sason B'Simcha. And the reason is because that last bracha is said independently, even when the other brachot are not said. The other five brachot are not said. So therefore, halachically, where there is no panim chadashot, there is still reason to say the last of the sheva brachot, and then borei pri hagafen, and treat it in the same way as you would have treated the Sheva Brachot. Instead of saying six brachot and then Borei Pri HaGafen, you only say the last of the brachot and you say Borei Pri HaGafen. I highly recommend that if such a situation comes up or such a situation exists, that one should say that bracha. I don't see any reason, and I don't find any source, I've not found any source to the accepted custom or the usual custom of not saying it. And the reason I believe it's simply not said is lack of knowledge, lack of awareness. And this last bracha, the Shulchan Aruch writes, "She'ein omrim achal birkat hamazon ela birkat asher bara." That's only when only the last bracha is said, "Eino tzarich asara." There is no need for 10 people. In other words, not only can you do it without panim chadashot, but even if there are less than 10 people, it's only a regular zimun, you can say that last bracha. There are those who are mafmir, with 10, but the Shulchan Aruch openly says you can say it without 10 people, even if it's smaller. The only reservation to that is that at least one of those present should not be a member of the household. In other words, if it's a family meal, right? The chatan and kala are staying with the parents of the chatan, right? And they all sit down to eat breakfast, or they all sit down to eat lunch. There's nobody else there, but there is a zimun. In that case, you don't say the bracha of asher yatzar, asher bracha sason v'simcha. But if somebody else comes, even if it's someone who has been previously at Sheva Brachot or at the wedding, then you would say the last bracha, even if there isn't a minyan. That's as far as the necessity, not necessity of the Panim Chadasot and the replacement or the alternate of saying only last bracha when Sheva Brachot don't or should not be said as far as the halachic requirements.
I'm surprised because we go to such great lengths to try to have 10. I always thought that that was the...
Yeah, we go to great lengths that we can say all Sheva Brachot. Ideally, we'd like to say all Sheva Brachot. And to say all Sheva Brachot, that you need both 10 people, 10 men, and Panim Chadashot. However, there's still an element of being Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu when that's not possible, that doesn't exist.
So we're only skipping the last one, that was it? If it's under 10?
If there's less than 10, then we should say only the last one. Let's skip. Say only the last one.
Oh, say only the last one.
Say only the last one. Skip all the others.
Okay. So in fact, there is no Shever Bochot without the 10.
Correct. There's no Sheva Brachot without 10 and Panim Chadashot.
Right.
There's a whole Panim Chadashot. Okay.
When women make it among themselves, is there such a thing to do that?
I understand.
When, if she only has women in her family and women friends and they make a meal for her, for the couple. And they show up, and there's 10 women there. You know, I thought there's a possibility of three women benching. Do we have the same rule if it's 10 women? No other men around, other than obviously her husband.
So again, the presence of the man there, there are those who feel that becomes a problem as far as Zimun, but there's definitely what to be sumech on, that the women can... Basically, what most poskim say, that women could say zimun. They could not say the Sheva Brachot, because Sheva Brachot is said only when there's a zimun of Asara. Women do not have a zimun of Asara.
Right.
Okay? So the Sheva Brachot could not be said. The question would be, could they say just that last bracha? my tendency is to say that they shouldn't, but I've never seen anything explicit about it. Let me see 1 second. Let me check something. I can't say definitively. Let's put it this way: on a practical level, at this point, until I could come and say that I have a validation for it, I would refrain from only women from saying that, because, as I said, the custom as a whole is people don't say it, and you have to get into the question of a woman saying it or not. But I, at least from a Svara point of view, I could see a good argument, the fact that the woman could say it, because as some of the poskim point out, this bracha is not part of what's called Birkat Chatanim. Birkat Chatanim we find explicitly in Halacha, require 10 men. This bracha is not part of Birkat Chatanim, therefore can be said without that presence of 10 men, and we basically just require that there be a zimun. Since the Gemara does recognize a zimun of women, I could see a good argument that women could say that bracha, and if women were to do it, at least with the present knowledge that I have, I may be missing things. The present knowledge that I have, I couldn't say that it's prohibited. I think that there is reason or logical reason to allow them to say just that last bracha if it's really just the women. But obviously the chatan should be present. It should be the
chatan was they have 6, 7, 8 daughters, you know, and it's easy to make a meal with 10 women, but it's not.
The problem is there has to be presence of somebody who's an outsider.
Right.
Again, I don't want to say outright, oh, it should be done. And it's, as far as when it's men, I'm saying outright it should be done, even though it's commonly not done. As far as women, I'm not ready to quite say that, but I think that there is good enough halachic logic that if someone insisted on doing it, I couldn't come and say that that's wrong. Okay. I didn't look it up, you know, carefully to get a better impression, but at least my halachic thinking cannot come with a good reason why that would not be, other than Lona Hagukin is a broader
thing. If you find out sort of last minute at the wedding, let's say, and the guy is not halakhically Jewish, some people know, some people don't know, are all these things it's best to stay away from? The wedding,
You're talking about, you find out before the
chuppah? At the wedding, and people are talking, you find out, you know, that this guy came from the Ukraine or somewhere, and, you know, there's a question. There's somehow, you hope it was researched, but maybe it was not. And you suspect, and people wonder, and or they know. They know that he's not Jewish. And
certainly
it's not so uncommon anymore.
Certainly, if it's known that he's not Jewish, I think that you have to make the Seder Kedushin aware. And you may discover, you know, that what Sach, you know, he knows that, you know, there was some Geirut or something took place, and then people are just not aware.
Would you put it on yourself to go to the rabbi and question there, Masada Kadush, and say, what are you doing?
It's not a question, what are you doing? Go over to him and say, listen, as far as I know, the Chatan is not Jewish. How can we have this wedding? But again, usually it doesn't have to come up the last minute, because if you're aware of that, then when you get the invitation, you can raise the question. But if it does happen, yeah, I think that halachically there is a requirement to at least make the Rav who's Masada Kedushin aware that he's, you know, doing something inappropriate, unless he can show you that it's not.
A close family member, do you would you go anyway? Ruffle any feathers here, and you know, for one part, I'm not sure. But my brother just wrote me that his wife's sister's daughter married a guy from Nigeria. He went to the chuppah. I think he left just to give some respect to the larger side of the family to avoid the Shalom Bayit problem. They stayed briefly and then they left. And I wrote back saying I might have not shown up for the wedding, maybe showed up for a drink and say something to the family and left. Or neither. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I would have done. But
look, I think there's a certain element of subjectivity here, and some of it is, as you said, the question is, what will it cause or affect within the family? On the other hand, going and being present is on some level giving an okay. I personally would refrain from going to such a wedding, if only possible. More than that, I would try to refrain. Maisa Shahaya, almost. I would try to refrain from going to a wedding that is completely a reform wedding. Again, halachic aspects are not being part of it. You want to go to the meal afterwards, celebratory meal, okay, that's less of an issue. Be there at the official so-called halachic, which is not halachic, ceremony. There I would try to refrain from being part of it.
Likewise, another side of the spectrum, when there's a separate rooms for the men and women, we tend not to go to those either.
That's already something else, but okay, that's I think more an issue.
Hey, that's the way my wife's family does it. Separate rooms, okay? Don't knock it, especially if there's an open bar.
I think it's not halachic; it's more personal. But hey, that's the yeah. Just in 2 minutes before David starts, I just mentioned the issue that. Beyond the Sheva Brachot, first week is a week that halachically, the Chatan and Kala are meant to be together to the extent that the Chatan has a prohibition of doing melachot, and in general, the Chatan is viewed during that week, and equivalently the Kala, the Chatan is viewed as a melech. With halachic ratifications to that, the most blatant is that according to many deot, a chatan should not go out on his own during Sheva Brachot, similar to what happened we spoke about before, but the main purpose of before the wedding was Shmira, afterwards it's out of kavod for him as a melech. Lastly, should a chatan come to a minyan or to shul, There's a discussion in general halacha if it's right for a chatan to go daven in shul during the Shiva Yemei Mishnah. But if he does come, then he exempts the tzibur from saying tachanun because his yom tov affects the present tzibur who also therefore do not say tachanun. With that, we end this series. I'll give some thought as far as I'll be in touch with you, Bruce, as far as the possibility of a...
Thank you very much.
Okay, be well.
Shabbat shalom. You too.
Very nice.